Hey everybody, before we get started, I just wanted to jump on because we are so excited to announce that Restore registration is officially open. We can't wait to be with you again this year. It's going to be on September 5th through 7th at the Mountain America Expo Center in Sandy, Utah. That's the evening of September 5th and then all day on the 6th and the 7th. 3 days of incredible speakers, poets, musicians, and artists. We really think that what we have planned will blow you away again this year, so you won't want to miss it. Go to faithmatters.org/restore for tickets and we'll see you there. Hey everybody, this is Aubrey Chavez from Faith Matters. We're so excited to share this episode with you. It's with someone that we've wanted to talk to for a very long time, Desert Book President Laurel Christensen Day. We could see from afar that she's a trailblazing leader and a thoughtful publisher. And we were not surprised at all to find that as we got to know her a little bit, she's a woman of deep faith as well. Uniformly, everyone we've ever spoken to who's had a chance to work with Laurel absolutely loves her. And we've always been fascinated by Desert Book, by the unique place it holds in Latter-day Saint culture, and the responsibility it has in creating and distributing content that informs, inspires, and even shapes belief. Walking into a Desert Book and seeing the art and the books and the scripture sets always seem to make us feel nostalgic about our own upbringing and tradition, even while we're still living it. And Desert Book is, of course, much more than a retailer. They're a major content producer with business lines in books, music, art, and events. And it does all of this as part of the larger organization of the church. We thought Laurel's insights were incredibly perceptive and thoughtful. She shared thoughts with us about what to do when you make a mistake, even as a leader, or maybe especially as a leader, how you can react with openness rather than defensiveness, and with some introspection, really searching for truth in the criticism. She also shared a little bit about her story, including her journey as a woman navigating her business career, along with insights about advocating for yourself and what that could look like. And finally, Laurel was kind enough to share some advice for us at Faith Matters. This was really such a fun conversation with us, and we were so impressed with Laurel's genuine warmth and openness. We really think that you're going to enjoy this one. And with that, we'll jump right in. Laurel, thank you so much for coming. We're so excited to have you on the podcast.
Glad to be here. Thank you.
We've been waiting to do this for a long time, so it really is an honor to have you. And we are just so inspired by what you're doing at Desert Book. And I feel like we've noticed that you have been in the middle of a lot of heavy lifting over the last decade. And so we're just really excited to get kind of a glimpse behind the scenes and talk to you about what you've been working on all of these years. And so I would love for you to just start and tell us how you got involved with Desert Book in the first place. I know you've been there for something like 25 years.
Yeah, 26 this May.
Wow.
Tell us how it started.
Totally uninteresting story.
How did you end up here?
I doubt that.
I graduated from BYU with a really useless degree in speech pathology.
Oh, I have a useless degree from BYU.
Really?
Latin American Studies.
Oh, that's, I feel like that's more valuable.
Really?
Yeah, than a bachelor's in
It depends on what you're going to go
yeah,
into.
That might be. And I went back east for just a little bit and felt compelled to come back. Mm-hmm. And it was 1998 and the job market was such that there were way more jobs than people. And Deseret Book had this part-time marketing events position open that they had been trying to fill for several months. And I felt kind of compelled to like work mm-hmm. at Deseret Book. Mm-hmm. And so I applied for the job and honestly, I'm not just saying this. They were really desperate to fill this job. And so I got the job and decided I would stay until the Olympics, 4 years. That felt really respectable to me.
Yeah.
And one thing led to another and I've just had opportunity after opportunity. It's honestly, it has exceeded any expectations I had for like the professional side of my life. In fairness, I don't know that I had expectations for a professional side of my life.
Yeah.
But it has really been great. Mm-hmm. I went to grad school about halfway through and got a master's in communications management. And that's certainly been very helpful. But a lot of it's just been, you know, on the job education. I feel like I've gotten a mm-hmm. PhD in this industry.
Yeah.
And I've had amazing mentors and here I am.
Yeah. Wow. Did you see yourself as when you were a young person, sounds like in 1998,
yeah.
you know, getting going, did you see yourself on a leadership trajectory? Was leadership
I saw
on
Dead
your
Poet
mind?
Society when I was 15.
Okay.
And was going to be a high school English teacher.
Oh, wow.
Just maybe for a couple of years before I was a mom of like 6 kids.
Yeah. Wow.
So my leadership trajectory was like a leader in my home and in my community. That was, yeah. I had no ambitions or concept of having a career. I often say I climbed a ladder I never meant to get on. And mm-hmm. that's really true. It happened quite accidentally.
Yeah.
And I'm grateful for it for sure, but it wasn't like an ambition, ego. There wasn't any of that yeah. for me.
Yeah.
I think I've heard you say that you've had multiple jobs at Desert Book that didn't exist until
yes.
you had them.
Yeah.
So talk about that. Like, it does seem like there is some amount of creativity or ambition or,
Well, or I would say opportunities. Like,
okay.
Like I was good at seeing gaps, and I was lucky enough to have people, especially so Sherry Dew, hands down, was like the mentor of my whole career. Mm-hmm. And frankly, she was the first woman I knew who was like a successful businesswoman. And she gave me a lot of opportunities, but there were a lot of things starting that she was starting and that we were exploring at Deseret Book, like Time Out for Women is a good example mm-hmm. of something. But there were, you know, the music division was kind of exploding, and we realized that we were going to be launching some artists. And so we needed a manager for these artists, and there wasn't one. And I had never done that. And okay, I can figure mm-hmm. that out. And I think there's something safe about being the first person in a role, because you're not living up to any previous expectation. Yeah. So maybe it's a little bit of a career cop out to, you know, sign up to be the first person. But it was just continually given those kinds of opportunities where there hadn't been a precedent set, and I had a chance to do something that hadn't been done.
Was Sherry Dew leading the company when you joined?
She was a vice president when I got hired, and I didn't work with her for the first couple of years I would walk past her office. And she was in the General Relief Society presidency at the time. So, of course, I knew who she was. Mm-hmm. And she had a huge influence on my spiritual life mm-hmm. because of that calling. And then a couple of years into being at Deseret Book, I had chances to start interacting and working with her. And for a lot of my career, I've actually directly reported to her. Mm-hmm. And that's just been such a blessing, because I think it oriented me that this was normal, that like having women in leadership positions was a normal thing, and that there was opportunity for me regardless of my gender.
Yeah. Interesting. And so even in 2024, I feel like I hear a lot about equality in the workplace, you know, and there is still, I think in many places, a pay gap, you know, there's a gap in, you know, how much women are speaking in meetings compared to men, and all kinds of different, you know, promotion opportunities, that kind of thing. Did you feel like, as you climbed this ladder sort of unintentionally, mm-hmm. that you were needing to advocate for yourself extra because you were a woman in any way?
I think there were times, just depending on who I was reporting to and what I was doing, where I for sure had to advocate for myself in terms of compensation.
Oh, okay.
And I'm not quiet about that. It's something that we talk about a lot now in the company, because it's something I feel so strongly about, that people be paid equally. But in terms of opportunity, I didn't ever feel that. And again, I think it's because so much of my career, when I was reporting to Sherry, that piece of it didn't exist for me. DMC, which is the parent company of Deseret Book, I mean, there's a lot of female executives at the company. You know, Tanya Vey runs Bonneville International, which runs KSL and a lot of radio stations. And Ruth Todd is one of her vice presidents over content. Robin Rich ran Deseret News for a while. As I mentioned, Sherry has kind of paved the way, I think. So mm-hmm. a lot of times I was in meetings with other women, and I never felt that. I don't discount that it exists for a lot of people. It just wasn't my experience. Yeah. I will say the compensation thing, I think that's just a reality. It's a reality mm-hmm. in any industry. I don't think it matters where you work. But for me, that was probably the only place where early on in my career where I felt like I needed to advocate for myself.
I would love to hear more about Sherry Dew as a mentor. Do you mean that, you know, of course you were following in her footsteps in some ways, and it seems like she really was paving the way, but are there lessons that you really feel like she sort of, she really taught you directly when you were reporting to her, or just?
Yeah, I mean, Sherry has a knack. We could make this whole podcast about her, and she would hate that, and I would lose my job. But she has a real understanding of content and audience. Hmm. And even though that wasn't the first part of my career, it certainly has impacted so much of what I've done in the last part of my career. And so I'm a sponge. I watch people, and I make notes of what they do that works, and I try to implement those kinds of things. And I'm good in that if I make a mistake once and you help me see it, I'm not going to make that mistake again. And so Sherry gave me space to mess up, and it was safe to mess up. And again, learning the lesson. And so I try to emulate that now in my leadership. I try to say, look, we're going to make mistakes. Repeated mistakes are a problem, but mistakes are part of learning. And that's been kind of something that I've really realized the last couple of years in this new role overseeing the company, is that my job is to answer for mistakes, whether they're mine or not, whether they're real or not. Sometimes it's just a perceived mistake because of a miscommunication or a misunderstanding. And I'm not, as a result, I think I'm just not afraid of them anymore. There's something really liberating about saying,
wow,
we messed up. I messed up. There's just something liberating about that. And I feel like part of that has been just the unique training I got in the environment that I got.
At the same time, I feel like that's so rare. I mean, I don't know if I want to say so rare, but it is rare among leaders of large corporations, it feels like, or, you know, political leaders in some cases, to be able to own up to mistakes freely. Why do you think it is so difficult?
I think it's difficult because if you have ambitions that are yours, it becomes a little bit of like a resume test. So there has been something really healthy about the fact that I wasn't trying to go for the next thing. Yeah. And I think that's helped me actually have a level of just calm in the way I approach things, because I feel like I'm in the seat I'm in right now for very particular reasons. And I don't know how long it's going to last. But I'm not worried about the next thing. So a mistake for me and owning that mistake, it's painful because you want to think that you're smarter or you're better, but it's not for me in this realm of my life. It's not, do or die.
Yeah.
Wow.
And I think sometimes for leaders, it's such a personal like reflection or a fatal flaw to acknowledge a mistake. And what I've learned is covering a mistake and not acknowledging a mistake just makes mistakes worse. So we'd all be better off. The whole world would be better off if people would just stand up and say, you know what, we got that wrong. This was the wrong strategy. This was the wrong approach. We're going to pivot. And in fairness, our culture doesn't allow for that. Right? You make a mistake and I mean, you can lose everything.
Yeah.
So we're not really great about encouraging that with people.
Yeah. I agree with that. What about on the institutional side? Like, let's say a Deseret Book makes a mistake. Do you view that differently as yourself apologizing? You know, is it as necessary for an institution? Or would you say, I'm sort of maybe putting words in your mouth here, but would you say it always comes back to people anyway? So institutions?
I think it does always come back to people. I do think that there's a role for institutions and organizations to acknowledge mistakes and apologize for those mistakes. And what I've learned is that there's always details in the background you won't ever know. Yes. And sometimes you can't know. So I'm very comfortable. Let me restate that. I've had to become comfortable with people making judgments about things that maybe I can't speak of for whatever reason.
Yeah.
And you're going to have an opinion about it and you're going to fill in the blanks that I can't fill in. And I have to be okay with that. And as I say that, I want to be really clear that like, maybe I just started feeling that way last week in terms of like being okay with it. That is the hardest part, I think, of leadership, particularly in an organization that is privately owned, that isn't, I mean, there are a certain number of things that just, this is what I can share.
Yeah.
And I will acknowledge what I can acknowledge. And you either trust us that we're doing the best we can. You trust me that I'm doing the best I can, or you make an assumption and a judgment and everybody has that right.
You know, on a small scale, I think we felt that a little bit with Faith Matters. Like when you see the comments come through on social media or whatever, they typically, you know, they're addressing something very real that we're sort of like aware of.
Yeah.
And oftentimes there's been an agonizing decision behind whatever
that
it was.
They'll never know.
Yes. Yeah. And it can be really hard because you want to just defend yourself and act like the perfect decision was made. But it's like at the same time, you know, maybe it wasn't. And we were torn about this anyway.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
So it's like.
What's interesting to me about that is that I have come to value feedback and criticism, even when it's painful and hard, because at least it gives me insight into perceptions that I allowed to happen. And again, sometimes I can correct those perceptions. I could have been more clear on this. We could have handled this better. And then there are other times when there's nothing different we could have done. And I have to be okay. We have to be okay with the end result.
Yeah.
But either way, that feedback and that criticism is helpful.
I think that's right.
People can be mean, can't they?
But it's hard. Yeah, it can be hard.
It's so hard. Absolutely. I remember, and maybe this is too specific and we can cut this if we need to, but I remember specifically when the thing happened with James C. Jones and the racism course was going to come out with Deseret Book. And then I don't know, this is probably one of those things where like there were a lot of hard decisions happening behind the scenes. And all we heard from you was this, like the classiest, most beautiful, just acknowledgement that it happened and an apology. And also just like, where I think you gave James all of the rights to the video. And I remember this encouragement in the newspaper article that just said, like, we hope you'll go buy the course. And like, this is James's now, and we wish him well. And there were no hard feelings. And it felt like, of course something happened because you got so far with it. Like, of course there was a hard decision to be made, but I had so much respect for the fact that you were not defensive in any way. Like, there was no, I always think of what Brene Brown says about that only guilty children explain. Mm. And there was just no defensiveness about that. It was just like, you had enough strength to just say, we're so sorry for the way this happened. And we're so happy for James. And like, we really have only good feelings here. And I felt like I could see myself like, that is a really hard position. I get really defensive and I want to explain every reason. I want everyone to believe me that this was the right decision. And it was just like such a profound cultural moment to see like this, you represent something really big and this was a really complicated situation. And there was so much strength in just a very simple and genuine apology. And it did not make you look weaker. It felt like a lot of strength. And so we've always just had so much respect for you.
Well, I appreciate that. And let me say just a couple of things. There are really important lessons to be learned when mistakes are made. Yeah. And that's a good example of something where there were a multitude of mistakes made. And at the end of the day, the leader is responsible for mm-hmm. whatever happened. I also want to say that there were a lot of people in the background that were involved in conversations that were really meaningful and important. And mm-hmm. we changed practices and approaches after that experience. And at the end of the day, we don't extend enough grace to each other. Yeah. We just don't. And James and I have had interactions since then. And I have so appreciated the grace he has extended me. And I think he's appreciated the grace I've extended him. But that's a good example of there will always be pieces of a puzzle you just don't know. And right. sometimes you have the right to know those pieces of a puzzle. And most of the times, if you're not involved directly, you just don't. Yeah. We just have to give each other more grace on a multitude of things. We need to give leaders more grace. We need to give people in congregations more grace. We can do so much better. And we of all people yeah. should be better at that yeah. than we are.
Yeah. Thank you. Yeah, that's beautiful. In a personal way, when you realize a mistake has been made, how do you stay open and in the arena and keep trying? Because I think the impulse, of course, is to protect yourself. And that can sometimes is not the most productive thing or the thing that needs to be done. Sometimes maybe it is, but can you just talk about what you do when you just get that stomach? I think everyone can relate to this, just that stomach dropping feeling of like, this went really wrong and we have this very big problem. How do you stay grounded and without, you know, falling into this shame spiral, which I think brings out the very worst in our egos usually. Yeah.
Well, to be fair, I feel like if we talk about this, I'm going to be talking a little bit philosophically because I am not yeah. perfect at this. Mm-hmm. And people who know me well or who work with me could hear me say something and say, yeah, I wish you did that. Yeah. But in a very general way, I really truly think if you can believe that sinking feeling, whatever it is going to end faster if you address the thing, mm-hmm. it makes everything better. I think it makes, you know, wow. contention in a marriage better or a relationship or in a ward or whatever the scenario is. We've got to rethink the way we look at mistakes in general. Like, we're literally here to learn from our own experience. And that experience is going to involve mistakes. And institutions, organizations, individuals, none of us are immune to that. So I've gotten to a place right now in my leadership and in my life where life is too short for me to be like holed up in knots because of something that I did or didn't do. And again, that's not to say that I'm perfect at this mm-hmm. at all. I have so many examples. I could give you one yesterday that I could have handled better. But I just think as a general rule, it really does come down to grace. Will we give ourselves the grace? Will we give other people grace? Will we give family members grace? And I want to be the person who errs on the side of grace more than I don't. I'm not perfect in that, but I think I'm getting better. And as a leader, I really have realized that at the end of the day, somebody's perception about the way I handled something is valid. It's valid, even if I completely disagree with it. Sorry. Even if I think it's like there's bias in their perception or there's inaccurate information, it kind of doesn't matter. Their perception is their perception. And I did something to play into that.
Yeah.
And we all do that. We all do that.
Yeah. So. Love that.
Last year, so I heard you speak at Mormon Women for Ethical Government at their conference. I'm like, and it feels like you're doing really hard work trying to make sure that you're aware of blind spots by inviting more voices to the table and just trying to expand the perspectives that you're aware of as a leader and maybe just as Desert Book generally. And so I would love for you to just talk about why you feel like that has been so crucial to the mission of Desert Book and why it's been important to you.
Yeah, it's such a group effort with an organization our size. And there are a lot of people that are passionate about the work. I think I got to a point in my personal life, looking at the world, in the church, in my work, where I realized that so much of our worldviews or our ways of approaching things are because of our lived experience. And at the end of the day, if we're missing proximity to other lived experiences, we're missing a huge part of the story and the conversation. So I was single I didn't get married until I was 41. And I learned, if you don't know somebody who's single, if you haven't like been in the trenches with somebody who's single, you don't know how certain things that are said or certain things that are done at church impact someone who has not lived a more traditional path. Well, the same is true for our LGBTQ brothers and sisters and our Black members. It doesn't matter if you only rely on your lived experience, you're missing out. And so I think part of our job at Deseret Book is to provide that proximity if you don't have it in your normal circles. If your ward is very homogenous, the church isn't. There's a beautiful, diverse membership. And so maybe an article in LDS Living or a guest on a podcast or a new author or a collection of essays from a particular group of members of the church can help provide that proximity that maybe you haven't had in your life. Because the reality is, if you don't have a neighbor or a child or a whoever that has lived life differently than you, you don't have a well to draw from to see the world any differently than the way you see it. So instead of being critical of closed-mindedness or somebody who only sees it a certain way, I've stepped back personally in my personal life and said, okay, what makes this person have that belief that is so drastically different from me? And I have to acknowledge, oh, well, my friendships, my relationships, my personal circles have absolutely impacted my worldview or have impacted the way I see this particular cultural practice or the way I would word the teaching of this doctrine so that it's more inclusive and more inviting. And I think we have a unique role in that. And I'm fortunate to have an amazing team of people who feel committed and passionate to do better representing a worldwide church. We have a long way to go.
Yeah.
But I think that is one of the strides that we have made and that we have to make and that the church is making. And we all need to be better to see that there's a life going on out there for a lot of people that don't look like us or have the same experience or the background as we do. Again, I use my singleness kind of as a great example of that changed my view of things, being single as long as I was in a very family-oriented church.
Yeah.
And so I want to try to do that on a host of different, you know, parameters in people's lives.
That totally makes sense. And I love what you're doing. You mentioned that you feel that Deseret Book has a unique role here. And that gets into really some interesting territory for me. I feel, and I don't think I could articulate it exactly, but I do feel that Deseret Book has an important and unique role to play in sort of like the formation of culture, you know, in the church and potentially you know, influences the church itself. So but you don't need to go there if you don't want to. I'm just curious how you see, you know, Deseret Book's mission generally, you know, what positive things you can make happen in this world that we live in as Latter-day Saints.
I think there are times probably in the history of Deseret Book where Deseret Book drove the culture, just because of the limited access. I mean, think about pre-internet and pre-social media, totally. Right? And if your only other frame of reference to the church was your annual, you know, Mecca trip to Salt Lake City. Like I grew up in, I spent my formative years in Kentucky. And so every summer we would come out to Utah.
Interesting, yeah.
I would go to that 2-story Deseret Book that's probably like older than you guys even are.
Yeah.
And so certainly there are times when Deseret Book helped drive or shape the culture or represent the culture. I think in the world we live now, one of the things that we're doing instead is like reflecting all that is good in the culture. That's the hope. Because our best natures need to be highlighted. And I think the church would say there, you know, anyone who wants to participate in the spreading of light, right? It's the Light the World campaign.
Yeah.
And Deseret Book has a role to play, and Faith Matters has a role to play in that. And individual influencers have a role to play in that. I think our job is to demonstrate and to attract people to the gospel, the restored gospel of Jesus Christ, by saying, this is a good way to live. This is a joyful way to live. And oh, by the way, it actually makes me a better person. I'm not a jerk on social media. Yeah. I'm not, you know, trying to make people's lives miserable. Why? Because I am a disciple of Jesus Christ. I'm keeping my covenants and I'm showing what that looks like in the world. The thing that fascinates me is how two people who are reading the same Come Follow Me manual, attending the same temple ritual, making the same covenants, can see and view the world so completely differently. And
yeah,
one of the things that I worry about culturally is that we are letting our personal ideologies, our social views, shape the way we see the gospel instead of the other way around. So my view of my ideological political views, my social justice views should be shaped by the gospel. And yet, and I'm sure you guys have seen this, like I know people, I sit in church with people who see things very differently than I do, and they think they're living a manifestation of their interpretation of the gospel. Mm-hmm. And the impact that has on our culture, I think, is a new territory. And so one of the roles that I think Deseret Book plays in that is to make sure that we are highlighting voices that are committed to truth and based in scriptural foundations and the words of modern prophets, and helping people see that there actually are, on a host of issues, there are a lot of ways to see the world. And they're all okay. We don't do a very good job of having like levels of orthodoxy in the church.
Right.
So if we can't accept that you and I can vote differently in an election and believe the church's stance on political neutrality and let the gospel shape the way we approach things, I think we're missing a really important part of what it means to be a covenant-keeping Latter-day Saint. And we don't allow for nuance. As members of the church, I'm not talking about the institution. I'm talking about fellow members of the church. We don't allow for it to be okay to take this stance on this political topic or this passion on this social justice initiative. We're not very good at that.
Yeah.
And I wish we were better. And I think there's a role to play as members of the church in being better at that.
Yeah. I think to me, part of the difficulty is, like you say, the gospel should inform all of our views. And I think I agree with that statement. And part of the problem is that we don't, like you said, we don't all interpret the gospel the same way. Like it's big and broad and covers lots of different things. And in one view, you know, Jesus is protecting the woman caught in adultery from being stoned. And in another, he's casting the money changers out of the temple with a whip. And like, which Jesus in this example are you going to follow? Like in your social media interactions or wherever? I don't know if Deseret Book, sorry.
Yeah. No.
I'll just let you respond.
No, that's a totally fair point, because I do think one of the challenges is everybody thinks they're defending the right thing.
Right.
Exactly.
Right? Yes.
And yet we're defending different things. So just as an example, last year there, I was in a situation where someone had a very strong personal feeling about the way I had handled something. And it was fascinating to me because this is a person who I see as a faithful Latter-day Saint. And they are defending the thing they think they've been called to defend. Mm-hmm. And I am defending the thing I think I've been called to defend. And at the end of the day, what is the thing?
Yeah.
I think that's what we have to look at, because you can define patriotism a certain way. You can define love a certain, you can defend a lot of things, but are you fundamentally defending something that is a basic tenet of the restored gospel of Jesus Christ? And if you aren't, you better be really careful, because everybody on either side thinks they're right in their defense. And I accept that there's nuance even in that defending. But what I've learned the last couple of years for me personally is, at the end of the day, am I pointing people to the gospel of Jesus Christ, or am I defending some passion thing that matters to me that actually, when this world is over, nobody's even going to be talking about? Mm. And so you can find a quote from a brethren, or you can find a scripture, but can you find 10?
Yeah.
Can you find 30, or can you find one?
Yeah.
And part of that needs to be, I think, what we're looking at as well. And again, this is, I don't mean to like simplify the challenge of it, but it is an interesting time, I think, as a member of the church, to realize there's a lot of passion about a lot of topics, and we better make sure that we're defending the things in the end that actually matter.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think that's probably a personal decision in a lot of ways, but I want to know that I helped make the whole better. And you asked me earlier, you know, how do you stay in? And for me, it's a matter of like, what do you really care about? And do you want to surrender to voices that you don't think accurately reflect the restored gospel of Jesus Christ? I don't want to surrender yet. And the people that I'm engaged with, and the content creators that are working with us, and, you know, we have a lot of diverse content creators that 5 years ago didn't have relationships with Deseret Book. We weren't seeking them out. They weren't seeking partnerships with us. And I am grateful for people who are willing to trust us. Maybe sometimes when we haven't even always earned that trust, to help us amplify the beautiful diversity of God's children, including members of the church, this worldwide, amazing institution when you think about it, how broad the restored gospel has gotten to the ends of the earth.
Yeah. You know? You're reminding me so much of what Patrick Mason talks about with the body of Christ, and that some people are the hands and some people are called to be the heart, and some people, like in a ward, you can be multiple parts of the body of Christ. And I like thinking about it like that sometimes, because it just is a reminder that a different perspective can be so complementary to whatever your own experience is. And it seems like that's kind of what you've done, like expand the perspective so that you can maybe not necessarily align perfectly, but like you're all part of the same body. And it's so illuminating to understand somebody else's experience. But we've noticed, especially just in the context of Faith Matters and inviting authors to come on, that there seems to be this like feeling in the air that Deseret Book is the stamp of approval, that like something that comes out of, like, do you sense that? Do you know what I'm talking about?
We get that feedback. Here's the thing. If you want to know the stamp of approval, it's really easy. There is a Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints logo.
It's literally a stamp.
It is. It's literally a stamp of approval. And we do our very best to make sure that the offerings we have are in line with church teachings and perspectives. And I think for the most part, we get that right.
Yeah.
But we also rely on feedback. And we find that, I mean, that's important to know. Oh, again, it goes back to perceptions. Oh, this doesn't feel in line with something. It concerns you. We're going to look at that. I can't say that we read every single page of every single book that is sitting on our shelves. Do we review everything at some level? Absolutely. But the stamp of approval, it's totally fair.
Yeah.
It's a fair perception. And that's what I tell people. Like, if you want to know what the church has officially approved, look for the logo and that will tell you. Everything else, we hope to earn our trust and our loyalty with our consumers by meeting their expectations of what they expect to get.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of great content and a lot of great scholarship out there that we are either tangentially involved with or not involved with at all. And it certainly shouldn't lessen that. And yet, do we have pride in like what the Deseret Book logo means? Mm-hmm. Of course. And I mean, it's part of our business. It's part of like what the value that we're adding to the marketplace.
Yeah.
So I can understand that there is a little extra something with that.
Yeah.
But I would never want anybody to think that we think we are the same as the actual official stamp of approval.
That makes sense. What would you say? What do you feel like are the most, we've talked about perspectives, but are there questions that come to mind for you that you feel like are especially important right now that you're hoping to invite into the conversation? Like we've got people invited to the conversation. What are the topics that you feel like are really alive right now in our community that you want people to be writing about and talking about and painting about and discussing in 2024?
So I would say less than very specific questions. It's the whole idea of a faith-based approach to exploring those questions. So because everybody has a different thing at a different time that is the question that they want to resolve in their life, right? So sometimes it's an actual like gospel-centered question about church history or church doctrine or something. And other times it's a much more application-based question that they have about how something's impacting their family. So one of the things that we really are committed to doing is cultivating, we say in our mission that we're cultivating stories worth telling, questions worth exploring, and beauty worth sharing. Mm-hmm. And to me, if it has relevance to enough people, then it's worth, it's a story worth telling. It's beauty worth sharing. It's a question worth exploring. And so we really are just trying to provide a platform. And I shouldn't say just because it's a lot of work and it's very hard, but we're trying to provide platforms for faithful members of the church to show what it looks like to live out being a Latter-day Saint in this crazy world that we're all living in. And so we hope to have more diversity in our art and more diversity in the stories that we tell. And that doesn't diminish the beautiful art that's already been made and the stories that have already shared. But I personally want to be part of a church that is so much bigger than anything that I've ever realized. And part of how I can experience that is through hearing other people's stories and listening to other faithful perspectives on difficult topics that will in the end, hopefully just add to my faith and not take away from it.
Do you feel like Deseret Book plays any role in specifically like defending the church from attacks, or is it more focused on the individual? Like what do you need in your life? And we're hoping to help.
Would say the role isn't to defend the church from attacks, but the role is to be another faithful voice, teaching correct doctrines and principles. And that should be the defense, right? I've heard Elder Bednar say several times that is the best defense of the church is truly understanding the doctrines. Mm-hmm. In terms of the individual, I think we have a unique additional role to play to help people live out what it looks like to be a member of the church in their home, in the art that they hang, in the gifts that they choose to give, at Christmas time, the ways they express their faith to neighbors. So there's a celebrate milestone piece of what we do that I think, whether it's missions or baptisms or temple marriages or whatever the case may be. And then there's this additional inspirational help that we can provide. You know, we use currency to place value on whatever we value, right? So we spend money to go to sporting events or to get our hair done or a variety of things. And one of the things we feel like is, well, if this has value to you, we're going to provide product that we hope blesses your life, the life of your family, the life of your neighbors in however you choose to interact with our product. So I would say there's a dual piece, but I've never felt like our job was to defend the church. Mm. Yeah. I have felt like our job is to highlight all that is good in the restored gospel and in living a faith-filled life.
Yeah. I have loved not just the celebrating milestones, but also just it feels like a celebration of our own peculiarity. Like I love that it just feels so unique. You could walk into a Deseret Book anywhere and just see images that are so unique to Mormonism that it feels like that's a celebration all by itself. And we've loved that, like loved really leaning into this is something different and peculiar, and it is so much about who we are and who our parents and their parents and this like long line of pioneer ancestors who maybe not even are necessarily our line, but who came before us in the church. And it just feels like a way to lean in and to celebrate what really is ours as members of the church. So that's something I really, really love about.
Yeah. We say we're a modern steward of 150-year-old.
It feels like
that. And that's what we are. I mean, we will never shy away from the heritage. Yeah. Just like the church is never going to shy away from the foundational roots of our pioneer ancestry and history. And we should never step away from that. And the reality is there's this worldwide church out there, right? That doesn't always feel that connection. And so we can help create that connection, or we can highlight what pioneer ancestry looks like in their family tree and in their genealogy. Yes. So I hope you'll always find things at Deseret Book that hearken to our peculiar nature and some of the quirkiness of our culture. And I hope what you'll find even more is a celebration of all that is good in what we have that has nothing to do with culture and everything to do with the beauty of the teachings of the restored gospel of Jesus Christ, which to me is it's what keeps me here. It's those teachings when all is said and done. It's the temple. It's the power of the priesthood. It's the way we look at the Book of Mormon and prophetic counsel and authority. Like those things are as unique as green jello and funeral pictures, you know, and they're worth celebrating.
Yeah.
And we can do a better job as members of the church, I think, celebrating the doctrine and celebrating the principles that should make our lives better.
It feels like you're coming from so much abundance that there's not this fear around the topics that are scary. Like that traditionally have felt like this is tricky territory. And we've loved, like, I'm thinking of your Let's Talk About series, but it feels like that's been a general orientation that these big questions don't need to be avoided or put away. And this is something we can openly acknowledge and have a conversation about. So I'm wondering if you feel like that was a shift since you've been at Deseret Book. Has that always been the case that those questions were being talked about, or is this something that you've been intentional about in the last 25 years?
Yeah, like, I would say that like the gospel topics essays are a great example of we don't ever get ahead of where the church is. We don't ever get ahead of what the church is doing. And that's not our role. So the gospel topics essays is a great example of that door was open. Those conversations were happening. And I'm someone just on my personal faith journey. Like I take the gospel topics essay on the Book of Abraham, just as one example. I wrestled with that personally. Mm. I was like, wait a minute, what? The papyrus, and we don't even know what? And so I'm someone who thinks, you know, we believe a lot of fantastical things as members of the church, but general Christians do too. The virgin birth is a fantastical story. But it's accepted because you learn it from the time you're three and so many other people believe it. And it's not a thing anymore. It's not a hard thing to overcome and believe. And I'm someone who believes that would be the case of all of these hard topics in the church realm. If we would talk about these things and talk about them more clearly at a younger age, the hope is that they don't become questions we have to wrestle with later on. We can wrestle with other things. There's plenty of things to wrestle with in this life. You know, finding out that there's 9 or 11 versions, depending on who you talk to, of the first vision is startling, but only because you didn't hear about that till you were 30.
Yeah.
If you learned about it in seminary or you learned about it when you first learned the first vision story, it would just be part of the narrative.
Yeah.
And so I do feel like we have a unique opportunity to help have those conversations. And I wouldn't say necessarily that our perspective has changed. I would say, again, that's part of, rather than Deseret Book setting the culture, it's part of our reflecting the culture. Mm-hmm. I think we reflect where the church is, and we reflect what the church is trying to do. When President Nelson invites us to root out racism, we're going to do that. And rooting out racism, that root out word to me had to have been very intentional. It wasn't, we're going to sweep racism aside. We're going to clean up from racism. We're going to root it out. Well, you can't root something out if you don't dig in and understand it. And so I just think we have an opportunity to reflect what the church and the, our leaders are encouraging us as members of the church to do. We have a role to play in that. You have a role to play in that. Any, you know, influencer on social media has an opportunity to play a role in that.
Yeah. I love that.
Yeah. I'm curious how you think about financial stewardship, if it's okay to ask about this a little bit. Like, obviously, so Desert Book is a for-profit entity. It rolls up through DMC to the church itself, which is obviously a faith-based nonprofit institution. I'm curious, and obviously the majority of your revenue, as I understand it, comes from church members who are looking for various media to help them along the way in their faith journey in some way. So I'm curious how that sort of affects the way you think about pricing and how much profit you should be generating and your margins and things like that. Like, what's your financial philosophy?
So,
Is that too?
No, let me say okay. A couple of things. I think that's a perfectly fine question. There are years when being a for-profit company, that's a very loosely used term.
Okay.
Right?
We're because very familiar with this.
At the end of the day, we're in a retail business, whether it's e-commerce or brick and mortar, where look around. I mean, when was the last time you walked? Borders doesn't even exist anymore. Yeah. And so the fact that we're for-profit means that we need to pay our way at the end of the day. And we need to be self-funding and self-sustainable. And so we're very conscious about, here's a great example. Costs of materials and labor have gone up. Mm-hmm. When was the last time you paid $100 for a book? You're still paying 20, right?
Yeah.
Prices
of
books are not changing.
Yeah.
So our margins have gotten thinner and thinner and thinner. Now that's our problem. We've got to figure out how to reinvent pieces of our business so that we can be self-sustaining on other pieces. But I'm actually grateful for the question because I think that's one of the tensions sometimes for people with a company like Deseret Book. And I think it's okay for me to say this again. I mean, the for-profit, that is a very loosely term because we're lucky on any given year to pay our way, truly. Yeah. And it's that way for a lot of businesses in general that are in this space, in whether it's in publishing or you're in the retail space. So I feel like our job is to be good financial stewards of what we have. And there will be times when we sell a lot of something in particular that allows us to do the Let's Talk About series, for example, that isn't the best-selling series. In fact, if we were just making a strictly financial decision on the Let's Talk About series, we would have never done it.
Wow.
Because the margins aren't, it's just not there. We're doing those books at what, like 10, I don't even know, $10.99. But I mean, they're essentially $10 books, bite-sized pieces on topics that we hope will make a difference. But there's not a financial reason to do that series.
Yeah.
There's a mission reason to do that series.
Yes.
And so every year we're balancing out what we're doing that's mission driven, what we are doing that will pay for that mission driven product. You know, the priestcraft thing.
I was just going to ask you about that.
Yeah, at me, totally. my whole career.
Okay.
Career. And here's the bottom line. Anybody that accuses us of priestcraft, in my personal opinion, has not actually studied the definition of priestcraft in the Book of Mormon. Because at the end of the day, it's all about where are you pointing people to? And so I would suggest people look at that with the favorite podcaster they like to listen to that's gospel oriented, or favorite author, or favorite whoever. Are people pointing you to Jesus and to his teachings, or are they pointing you to them as the end all be all expert of whatever? To me, Deseret Book's role is to help point people to the Savior. And in the art that we do and the offerings that we have, does that mean every single thing that we do is going to be specifically, obviously Jesus oriented? No, but in the end, it better be. In the end, it better be. And so my understanding of priestcraft, I had to get very comfortable with this early on in my career. And what I realized is the intention and the motivation is what matters in the end.
Yeah.
If people felt like we didn't offer value to them in their lives, we wouldn't exist.
Yeah. You know? It's interesting to hear that. It's not a normal for-profit corporation. Like if you were a publicly traded company and you said, well, this is great for our mission, but it was really terrible for our profitability. Like that would not fly.
Yeah. We're not selling stock.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
Exactly. Like there's nobody buying into a publisher and a retailer these days. But we have the benefit of having this amazing legacy and heritage. And our goal and our intention is again, just to provide enough that it pays for these mission driven things that we are striving to do.
Yeah.
And if we can do that in a given year, then that's great.
Yeah. Very cool.
Yeah. That's so beautiful. Looking forward in the next few years, where, if you could just make your dream happen, does this look like inviting authors from other parts of the world to come and write for Desert Book about the gospel or about their life? Or like, how do you hope to actually do this to sort of expand our horizons and help us understand that Utah and this Mormon corridor is not even the majority anymore of the Latter-day Saint experience?
Well, first, I think there's a lot we can do even just for the U.S. church to expand voices and expand exposure to other stories and other lived experiences. So I want to be clear that I think there's a lot of work we can still do for the English, speaking church. But in terms of international members, I do think there are opportunities, and we're working really hard right now to find content creators that can help represent what it looks like to be a member of the church in Brazil and Mexico and even Australia. Even though they're English speaking, Australians don't just want all of the English material that still comes from the American church. They want to represent what it is to be an Australian member of the church. And so there's a lot of opportunities for us to do that. We're releasing a little animated series called, it's called Isabel and the Razzle Dazzle Third Ward. And it's this cute little 8-year-old, I think she's 7 going on 8, and her brother and her 2 parents. Her parents are Chilean, and they're living in some unnamed metropolitan U.S. city in a very multicultural ward. And it's little projects like that, again, that come from this mission-driven space until, you know, we prove out a business model for it, where we can better highlight what it looks like to be a member of the church outside of what has typically been viewed as the center of the church. Internationally, that's really important to us. We want to help highlight those stories, creating, you know, Come Follow Me product that reflects international members and having them tell their stories and having them teach scripture and not just always coming from here. That's hard to do in an organization that is for profit, that is trying to have business models in all of this space. But I think it's critical to the growth of what Deseret Book can be, that we're better at highlighting, again, this worldwide membership, which we have opportunities to do.
You've mentioned so many different things that you're working on and that are important to Deseret Book. I'm curious how you measure success, and maybe the better question is, like, where do you hope Deseret Book is in 10 years? Like, where do you see this going?
I hope 10 years from now, we will have easily increased the offerings of a diverse church. Mm-hmm. I hope that when you go into a Deseret Book store or shop online at Deseret Book, it's very easy to find authors and art and stories that you feel like help your children celebrate their unique differences. Mm-hmm. In terms of growth, we've got to do a better job and figure out new ways in kind of this media landscape of ours to monetize appropriately content that people care about, while also providing enough free content, because that's the name of the game for so many publishers now. And part of what we can do, I think one of the things we've talked about in the past is that we're not King Benjamin on the tower, right? Mm. That is the church. Jeff Simpson, who was the president right before me, helped me understand this in a really important way, that we are the talk among the tents.
Mm. Oh my gosh, that's such a good way to put it.
There's King Benjamin at the tower, and our job is to highlight the conversations that are happening from what is being given at the tower. And I think we have absolutely improved in that space. And I also think there are pieces of this that we haven't even conceived of yet. You know, before podcasts were a thing, I just don't think anybody would have been able to even articulate what a podcast was and how it was going to completely infiltrate our culture. Well, there's the next podcast-like thing out there. And what is that? And I think Deseret Book has an opportunity to help figure out what that is and then shape its use for members of the church in ways that are meaningful and powerful. And I'm trusting there's something 10 years from now that you and I can't even conceive of. that, but we'll figure it out because I think we've always been part of figuring it out and helping to, again, both shape the way church members interact with faith-based material and also reflect the ways that they want to and that will bless them and their families.
Yeah. Oh, that's really beautiful. I'm just thinking about this talk among the tents. I love that image because that really does set apart how you are different than the church. You're in alignment, but totally different. It like have you have a different purpose in that way or role.
And we know our place in that regard, right? We're not, I mean, our job really truly is to highlight whatever is happening here and help members figure out how to apply it in their lives in ways that are meaningful to them.
So. Yeah. Like same mission, different role.
Yes.
So I feel like we could probably say at Faith Matters that we imagine ourselves somewhere among this, the conversations among the tent people too. I would love for you to tell us, since you've been in this world so much longer than we have, what advice would you have for a Faith Matters group like us? Do you see that there could be a role that we can help fulfill?
I think there is a space for anyone who wants to engage in this work and help reflect the gospel. I absolutely believe that. Obviously, as a business, you have to be protective of your resources, but that doesn't mean that there's a scarcity mentality in terms of all of the voices that could be out there. I'm not sure that I have any grand counsel or advice. I think what you all are doing is actually really important. And I think you have found a community who wants these kinds of conversations. You're also oddly in a unique kind of benefit of being nonprofit. So you get, I mean, you have a completely different business model.
Yeah.
And it allows you, frankly, to kind of be in this space of like free content and community in a really beautiful way. If there's anything, I guess it would be something that I've learned and that we're trying that we need to all be careful not to get into silos and to just see the gospel and talk about the church in the ways that resonate with us and feel comfortable and validating. So I think anybody, you know, Deseret Book is in a unique spot of we're actually trying to reach a broader group of members of the church. We're trying to meet the needs of a lot of different groups. And I think one of the benefits of Faith Matters is there is this really interesting community that are people kind of wrestling with the same things and talking about the same things and wanting the gospel reflected in a particular way. And maybe one of the things we could all be better at is making sure that we're sharing additional perspectives and ways to see the gospel or better understand, maybe this is a better way to say it, better understand, as we mentioned earlier, how two people who are making the same covenants and reading the same Come Follow Me manual can approach the gospel so differently. And I don't want to be misunderstood. Like racism should always be called out as racism. I'm not saying like understand different perspectives in a regard like that. And yet, if I really want to have influence and I really want to make a difference, it's pretty important that I understand how someone can hold a view that I see as racist and hear them out and understand how they got there so that maybe I can help share a different perspective that would help them open their mind as well. I need to be open to saying, I probably don't see the world 100% perfectly. And what's my blind spot and who can help me see that? So I think when you're building a community like Faith Matters, you have an opportunity. I wouldn't say obligation, but I would say you have an opportunity to make sure that you're not also letting your community be so comfortable that they're not ever being challenged in like, oh, maybe we're not getting this right.
Yeah.
Maybe there is a different line between justice and mercy than we want to believe. Maybe God really does require these things of us. And he can be a loving God all at the same time. I think we've all just got to be careful that we're not getting too comfortable.
Yeah.
That's so good. Thank you so much. We've talked often over the years that we probably did something right when our YouTube comments are completely opposite opinions about the same episode.
We say that like, all the time.
Oh, you guys are the worst. It's so progressive. Oh, you guys are the worst. It's so conservative. Yeah. Like
if I made
the
same both episode, sides angry, I feel like, okay, we
that
did
probably,
something.
Yeah. Super uncomfortable, but also that's part of the point. Like
it is part of the point.
The point of community that you sort of temper each other and that tension is
if everybody loves everything you're doing all the time, who are you serving?
Yeah.
And because I don't think Jesus had the benefit of making everybody happy all the time, right? And so we just need to be careful that we're not ever trying to appease any one voice so much that we've isolated all the other people that make this fabric of community of Latter-day Saints. I wouldn't say what it is, but what it could be. I just don't think we're very good at that yet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And we need to be better at that. Yeah. We of all people.
Yeah.
I just personally believe should lead out on that.
Yeah.
And I want to be part of the group that's leading out on that.
So. Yeah, you are. Yeah. Thank you so much. We can see that this is happening at Desert Book and we really have been so inspired by it. So thank you for all of the boots on the ground work that you've been doing behind the scenes.
Well, thank you. And really, truly, I mean it. There can't be enough of us engaged in this important work. And so kudos for what you all are committed to doing as well.
Thanks.
All right. Thanks so much for listening. We really hope that you enjoyed this conversation with Laurel Christensen Day. If Faith Matters content is resonating with you and you get the chance, we would love for you to leave us a review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen. We read all of the reviews and it really helps us to get the word out about Faith Matters and we appreciate the support. Thanks again for listening and remember you can check out more at faithmatters.org.